Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
If you told me that Jet Williams is going to become the Mets' everyday second baseman of, you know, for 5, 6, 7 years, that wouldn't shock me. And if you told me he's going to be the center fielder for, you know, next, you know, till he hits free agency, that wouldn't shock me either.
The New York Mets farm system keeps getting better, and I'm excited to talk about this next guy. He is their number one prospect, according to Baseball America. Let's hit the prospect profile. It's a fun name, too. Scotty Braun, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce. I'm talking about Jet Williams. That's a fun name, and he's not the biggest dude. He's not what they look like, as some would say, for a top prospect, J.J., but why is he number one in their system?
You know how we had Bob Walk, and Bob Walk was a terrible name for a pitcher who kind of, you know, threw strikes? Jet Williams is a perfect name for Jet Williams, because when you ask, well, what's Jet Williams' game like, it's their speed, you know, in addition to some power on base skills, all that. The thing I can't get away from, though, like you mentioned, he's not the tallest guy. 5'6" is what he's listed at. I think when I started Baseball America, which is more years ago than I would like to admit, I don't know if he'd have been our number one Mets prospect, because there was a time where we were really, I would say that we got really concerned about, you know, stature, right? Like a 5'6" guy, is he going to have enough impact? Is he going to hit the ball hard enough? Is he going to hold up in the minor, in the major league grind enough to be, you know, an impact player in the big leagues? And Jose Altuve and Dustin Pedroia and guys like that have really kind of paved the way, kind of shown like, hey, it's not how tall you are. It's kind of how strong you are. And there are some advantages also to being 5'6". Jet Williams gets on base. Jet Williams has a good idea of the strike zone. And you have a short swing when you're that, you know, you have shorter levers, makes it a little easier to control that swing. So I put all that together, Jeff, like, what is it that really kind of jumps out to you and makes Jet the number one prospect in a Mets system that has a couple of guys who are solid candidates?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, some really good pitchers there, of course. But, you know, I think the thing with Jet Williams, when you talk to scouts or even just, you know, sit on a couple of games and just sort of see how he plays the game, you know, ultra competitive, ultra fiery, you know, sort of a guy that you would say plays with his hair on fire, but versatile tools. Maybe not the most tooled up guy, but there are some loud tools that'll show from time to time. There is speed. There's more impact than you think. I mean, there's been, you know, 90 percentile EV is like above 103.5. So it's about major league average. So he does a lot of things really well. I think, you know, not necessarily a shortstop long term, but probably has the ability to play there a little bit. Could fit in center field, second base. I think he's a guy that could almost be like a super utility type, play a bunch of different positions, hit at the top of a lineup, as you mentioned. His on-base skills are excellent. There's bat-to-ball skills there as well. Kind of had an underwhelming regular season in 2024 due to some injuries, but showed some sparks again in AFL, and I think with a full healthy offseason could be poised to potentially make the jump and help the Mets this year.
We know he had a wrist injury. That's kind of something we're hoping in 2025 is kind of put behind him, but that's kind of one of the reasons he went to the Arizona Fall League. But really, that's kind of the key thing for the Mets, the key things for Jet Williams in 2025. This should be the year he arrives in the big leagues, but it's mainly about staying healthy. And what is interesting about this, and I wanted to see what you think about this, Jeff, but when I look at Jet Williams and you say, okay, if I'm a Mets fan and I've never seen him play, and you say, well, give me a description of him, it's kind of a similar skill set to Luis Angel Acuna, who also kind of had a rough season, but then had a very good, a very impactful addition to the, you know, to the big league roster at the end of the season. I think Jet Williams is kind of a better version of that, but again, some of that position versatility, on base skills, and you know, the ability to kind of provide an impact on the base pass as well?
Yeah, I don't think it's that different. It's sort of the same bucket or genre of player. Maybe a little bit more impact and the ability to put the ball in the air more consistently for Williams. Acuna, I think, is just faster, a little bit more twitchy. Though, you know, Jet in his own right, of course, is quick and, you know, twitchy as well, you know, hence the name. But, you know, I think overall it's probably a fairly good comp. It's a similar player. But I do think there's maybe a higher outcome potential for Williams just based on the on-base ability and some of that stuff. And I do think the impact is a little bit more actualized.
I want to go global for a moment. JJ, do you feel much better about the Mets farm system these days? This was the missing link for them as they tried to mimic the Dodgers on the East Coast. That's at least what the owner of the organization, has in mind, Steve Cohen. He's like, we want to be the Dodgers of the East. They certainly have the money portion down, but the farm system portion was a problem. And I felt like, you know, those Verlander Scherzer deals were starting to help load up on the prospect side. And they've remained disciplined by not trading away names like Jet Williams.
I'd say the depth is getting there. You know, you're still going to want a little bit more of top end impact talent. I would say that the Mets don't compare to some other teams at the top of our, you know, farm system rankings. Like, again, you look at what the Red Sox are doing right now, that obviously jumps out, what the Rays are doing. But at the same time, I also want to acknowledge the Mets have kind of, as you said, they've been disciplined, but they've not been sellers very often. This is the team that in the last couple of years has been more of trying to not give away the farm system, but they're also not really adding to it that much since the Drew Gilbert trades and the moves like that. So you look at this overall, I say, yes, the trend line is a positive one. And the other thing that kind of jumps out with that is they're now in a different situation they were before, because you look at them now, I'd say that the Mets now are in a situation where prospects are to fill holes as they need them. And, you know, again, having depth is beneficial for that. We've seen that kind of the Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty thing where, okay, we thought Beatty was going to be the guy, then Vientos kind of is the one who stepped up, and maybe Beatty does in the future, but that kind of gave them that plan B option. So they have done a better job of that. They're doing a little bit better job, I'd say, on the pitching side of kind of having a number of options coming up. But the key other part of this is they are getting to that point where I do think if the Mets are really in it in 25, like I look at their farm system, Jeff, and say there are a number of players here who could end up being trades, you know, to kind of really bulk up the big league club by trading away prospects now.
Yeah, ultimately, I think when that Dodgers line was made, that's sort of what their goal was. You know, they have the ability to acquire big contracts, players that, you know, have expiring deals that they potentially could re-sign for big money. And I think, you know, ultimately, that's what the goal for the Mets is to build up this farm system, to have, you know, a kitty of assets that they can more or less go to and move when they need to at the deadline or any other point in time to, you know, keep improving that major league roster or supplement players that maybe get hurt. That's obviously going to happen throughout a season. I think, you know, that's what the model probably is. And it seems like it's building up to that point and sort of all systems go. And there's certainly not an organization that's scared to invest in the international market or in the draft.
One more for you, JJ, and this is more of a global question as well. Do you think that the Mets would want to position Jet Williams to a certain spot? I mean, I feel like it's always been difficult for teams to find center fielders that can hit and stay on the field versus an infielder. You're bringing up the Acuna versus Jet Williams comp. It sounds like Acuna would be better served in the infield, but curious of your take.
I think Jeff said the same thing. I think that center field probably is the best long-term fit for Jet, but I do think that the versatility, I think teams nowadays love to kind of leave these questions kind of open-ended because crazy things can happen. I'll put it this way. If you told me that Jet Williams is going to become the Mets everyday second baseman of, you know, for 5, 6, 7 years, that wouldn't shock me. And if you told me he's going to be the center fielder for, you know, next, you know, till he hits free agency, that wouldn't shock me either. But at the same time, Sal Frelick becoming an infielder for the Brewers, that would shock me. And we're seeing things like that. I think that teams really do like keeping their options open nowadays. And Jet Williams is a player who gives you a lot of those where you say, okay, let's go to spring training. Let's go to midseason because he probably needs a little bit more time in the minors. But when he's in the minors this year, they can look at it and say, well, if we have injuries, if we have a need, this is the guy who can plug in at multiple positions. So we want to keep that versatility going just for the standpoint of it provides multiple avenues for him to end up in the big leagues rather than say, this guy is a center fielder. And yeah, you can move him to a corner, but these are the only options. And in that case, maybe you have a need that comes up because of something unexpected. And you say, I wish we hadn't closed that door.
So Jet Williams, number one on Baseball America's list for the New York Mets. You can learn about many more number ones with other organizations by just staying here on the Baseball America YouTube channel. Get yourself a subscription too and learn about all of the top prospects in different organizations. And we will see you on the next one.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Their hope, I think, is to build a lot of depth in the system, hope that a couple of guys pop, and that they have the pitching to sort of push them into a competitive window.
Let's learn about the top prospect in the Miami Marlins organization provided by Baseball America. It's called a prospect profile. I'm Scott Braun, along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. So, J.J., tell me about Thomas White, and do you think he's the next big thing in Miami on a mound?
Yes, I think he's absolutely the next big thing, and he is kind of pretty big, too, as you see on the photo there. Like, this is a guy who's pretty well-built already. Coming into 2024, it was like, okay, Thomas White, Noble Meyer, the two best pitching prospects in the Marlins system. At this point, here we are in 25, and I would say that it's pretty clear that Thomas White looks like the best pitching prospect in the Marlins system. He was considered arguably the best lefty pitching prospect in the 23 class. You can look at where he was picked and say, really, look how far he fell. It was just because of asking price. This is a guy who kind of showed what he could do in high school and then has only gotten better since then. Jeff, when you look at Thomas White, the pitcher, what is it that makes him the clear-cut number one for the Marlins?
Yeah, I think when you just look at the quality of stuff, of course, what the performance was, you know, throughout the season, White outperformed Meyer. But I think when you look at the fastball quality, that was one of the things about Noble Meyer that was sort of questionable. And White, I actually was sort of pleasantly surprised. The numbers overall in terms of, induced vertical break, HB, all that sort of stuff, just how the fastball moves is really good. It's almost Cole Reagans-esque in terms of the amount of ride and run that he gets on it with power. There was, secondaries, which were kind of the question coming out of high school here in Massachusetts, how good is his breaking ball going to get? Can he show a quality changeup that he can land for strikes, consistently? I think that he answered a lot of those questions. He added a slider this year as well, kind of changed the shape of his breaking ball a little bit. So it's an interesting pitch mix. Now he kind of has like a 3-4 pitch mix where all those pitches kind of move in different directions and have quality. And, he's shown the ability to land them consistently in the zone. So I think when you look at all those ingredients, you look at how young he is, as JJ said at the top of the show, his build and just how physical he already is. And there's probably even some good strength projection left. I think it's almost no question in terms of who should be the number one pitching prospect in that Marlins system.
The thing that you can't help but kind of think of is if someone's trying to say like, okay, I've never seen him pitch, what should I be thinking of here? Think Blake Snell, who was a top high school, pitching prospect in the Rays system. Now many years ago, was our player of the year now many years ago, also at Baseball America. But when you look at White, like the strengths and the weaknesses, The strengths are, it's really impressive stuff from the left side. If there is a weakness right now, it's the walk rate, it's the control. But sometimes with his control, kind of like Blake Snell's, it's a little bit about getting strikeouts. It's a little bit about nibbling. It doesn't feel like it's like he just has no clue of where the strike zone is. It's more of kind of the way he pitches right now. And so you could make the argument, oh, what he's going to have to really do, his remaining to-do list is he's just got to get a lot better at throwing strikes consistently. Or then you could also look at it and say, it's going to be hard for, yeah, he'll keep working on that, but this is working for him pretty well right now. And with that being the case, it's kind of, yeah, it's something you would love to see him take a step forward with. But if it doesn't even improve dramatically, we have seen Blake Snell kind of show you can have success with this kind of stuff with that kind of approach. And this was kind of something that was also true of Blake Snell as he was kind of coming up through the minors as well. We saw sometimes control got better, but we've also seen at times where it kind of wavered a little bit as well. Thomas White, again, he's really young. So this is also his to-do list as he's really kind of hitting his 20s, you know, so he's probably going to hit double A before he turns 21 this year, which is pretty remarkable and really just kind of just spells out what an intriguing and interesting pitching prospect he is.
The one thing I noticed sometimes with Snell lately, JJ, is how he doesn't want to give in. And if you choose that and you're super stubborn, you're going to walk some guys. So I'm wondering, mm-hmm. you know, if Thomas White does eventually take that route, how that plays out. You know, I mean, sometimes there's the balance of control versus just getting a little bit more aggressive and trusting your stuff, right?
Yeah, but I was going to say, if it pays off in multiple Cy Youngs, I think you say, thumbs up, let's just do that 1,000 times out of 1,000.
Agreed, agreed. All right, was there anyone else in consideration for a spot like this? Thomas White is, I would say, a lesser-known name than most of these number ones that we're going to come across.
I will say he's one of the names who you'll be hearing a lot more of this year. I wouldn't be shocked if he's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball at some point this year. We kind of have that group of guys who are really knocking on the door of the big leagues, that guys like Jackson Jobe, who really is, he's already reached the big leagues. Thomas White's part of that next wave. The stuff here is really, you know, really impressive. I would say that Jeff mentioned Noble Meyer. Noble Meyer was the other guy who's in consideration. It just really, White kind of took that step forward this year. But if you look at this Marlins system, which I just got to be honest, is not in as great a shape as you would want for a team who's in an utter rebuild. With all of that, they have a lot of intriguing prospects, but there really wasn't anyone else you would say, okay, is that player kind of making an argument against White for number one? There are a lot of prospects in this Marlins system, I would say now, that have plausible paths to big league careers, but we're going to have to see if how many of them are regulars. And that's something that is really not a question with Thomas White. Thomas White is 100% a plug him into your rotation. As long as he stays healthy down the road, plug him in the rotation. Right now, when we talk about it, he's so young. There's a part of me that thinks, you know, you could be talking about by the end of the year or by 2026. At the same time, young pitching prospects often will hit a hiccup or two. You don't want to go overboard with that, because a guy like Andrew Painter, if we were talking about Andrew Painter a couple of years ago, we'd have said, man, he's just knocking on the door. Then Tommy John arrives and all of a sudden it's a couple of years later and we're still waiting for him to kick that door in. So there's always the durability risk. There's always, you could hit that double A, triple A setback where you have to make a few adjustments. But you look at this all together and you say, Thomas White should eventually be near the front of the Marlins rotation.
And Jeff, the Marlins are a window team. And what I mean is they're never going to have, you know, a 10, 15 year run where they're just good every year under this ownership group or the previous ones that we've seen, right? We've seen the skit for a long time. So I just think it's important that they actually time out how everyone is peaking, if that makes sense. Make sure that you've got guys all kind of coming up at the same time and able to be good around the same time, because I felt like they just mistimed the last run.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important for teams like this where, you know, there's not a fan base that I think is clamoring for victories and, you know, consistent winning teams. You know, that's obviously not something that's been part of the Marlins history, even when they did have winning teams for that matter. And the ownership, you know, regardless of whether it was the older ownership group or the new ownership group, just hasn't sort of invested that way. You know, they brought in Peter Bendix, you know, from the Rays. I think they're trying to sort of copy that model. Seems like there's a lot of multi-position guys that are coming in, a lot of guys that are good hit tool, sort of on base ability guys, and then build around pitching. So their hope, I think, is to build a lot of depth in the system, hope that a couple of guys pop and that they have the pitching to sort of push them into a competitive window and then supplement as needed with, you know, maybe cheap older free agents or something like that. That kind of seems like the direction of where they'd like to head. Whether they get there or not is another question. They certainly need to add more talent. They did do a good job of adding some talented players, though flawed, at last year's trade deadline. There's maybe more impact and power in the system than there's been in a while. And, you know, they've done a good job over the years, regardless of what the major league team has been like in terms of developing pitching and getting homegrown or at least players that they acquired who debut with them up to the major leagues and getting them a little bit better.
So Thomas White is the name to know for Marlins fans and for prospect fans in general. He's number one on Baseball America's list for the Marlins. We do these every single day during spring training. So swing back for another one tomorrow, or if you need to get caught up on others, then you can do so now. And please hit the subscribe button here on the Baseball America YouTube channel, or if you're listening on a podcast platform.
You know, if there's another gear for him to find here, then you really are talking about a guy who maybe we're underselling by saying he could be an extremely well-rounded player.
We're running through top prospects in each organization, thanks to Baseball America. And this is a name many of you will know, especially college baseball fans. Let's hit the Washington Nationals player profile. The prospect to know here, number one on the list, it is Dylan Cruz. First round pick a couple of years ago, Scott Braun with J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. So there he is. JJ, we know him well. Many of us have spoken to him, a very nice gentleman who will be asked to be a part of the next great Washington Nationals team along with James Wood.
And Dylan Cruz, yeah, this is a name that if you don't know Dylan Cruz's name yet, I'm glad that you've joined the Baseball America channel here because we can help you get up to speed. Because Dylan Cruz has been famous for quite a while. He was considered one of the better high school prospects, maybe the best high school prospect, to get to college in his draft class coming out of high school. Goes to LSU, hits the ground running, is really one of the most decorated, one of the most productive, one of the most storied players in LSU history, which if you know anything about college baseball, LSU college baseball history is a long, deep, and impressive one. And Dylan Cruz was, you know, a key on a national championship team. And so then here you go. He becomes one of the first duo to go 1-2 from the same school because Paul Skeens went 1-1. Dylan Cruz went 1-2 and reached the big leagues with the Nationals. Now the question, Jeff, though, is I would say he's the clear, with James Wood graduated, he's the clear number one, I would say, on this Nationals list. But at the same time, do you see him as the next, you know, James Wood and him are going to battle to be the star of the Nationals of the late 2020s and 2030s? Or is he more the complementary piece and James Wood looks like the star?
Yeah, I think he's more of like a complementary piece. And, you know, I don't necessarily mean that in, you know, like a derogatory way. I mean, you could probably say that Scottie Pippen was a complimentary piece for Michael Jordan, right? I think he's going to be a really good all-around player that isn't going to necessarily have the high highs that Wood is going to have. Wood is going to have, in my opinion, I think he has the ability to do stuff that Aaron Judge does, that Shohei Ohtani does, and just kind of be like that spectacle of sort of like athleticism and power and baseball ability where, you know, Cruz is super tooled up. This is a guy that I think truly, when you say a five-tool prospect, he falls into that category. You know, the hit tool was pretty good. We look at the professional numbers. The strikeout rate was, you know, around 20% pretty much at every single level. There's a ton of impact here. The home run totals haven't shown up as much. I think some of that is kind of adjusting his bat path, getting the ball in the air a little bit more. He's not the first prospect that, you know, comes over from college baseball dominating with metal bats that sort of needs to learn how to catch a little bit cleaner barrels to his pull side and get some of his hardest contact airborne. But he is a guy that finds the barrel. He does hit the ball really hard. The EV numbers are all really good in terms of, you know, the big sample size stuff and the minors and college baseball, et cetera. Doesn't swing and miss a lot. He got a little bit more aggressive this year in terms of his plate approach. But I do think, like, all around, he does everything really well. He's a good center fielder. If they move him to right field, he could probably be, you know, one of the better defensive right fielders in baseball. He does a lot of things really well. I think he's going to be a really good player. I almost say it's almost like a supercharged Adam Eaton, which I know doesn't sound super sexy, but if I remember, Eaton's had one or two, like, five WAR seasons, and I think that's more in line with what Dylan Cruz could be, where maybe it's not 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases, but it's like 19 or 20 with a great batting average, a ton of runs, defensive runs saved in the outfield. He just does everything really well.
I was going to kind of go with that Eaton comp as well. Now, Eaton batted lefty, Cruz bats righty, but that as a production comp, I think it fits pretty well. And Nationals fans should be well versed on kind of who Adam Eaton, what Adam Eaton can be. The other thing I would say that does stand out here, though, is he's, when you look at your 2025 National League Rookie of the Year candidates, you have to put Dylan Cruz pretty high on that list because, one, we know, you know, he's already kind of gotten his chance to get acclimated to the big leagues, which is useful. And two, I would say on top of that, he has clear opportunity here. He's going to be part of that Nationals outfield. Like, you look at it and say, it's Wood, it's Jacob Young, and it's Cruz probably for 2025 and beyond. So he's going to get the at-bats, which is a key part of this, is that a lot of times you'll have guys who may have a really good rookie year, but it took them a couple of months to get kind of fully, you know, up to the big leagues. It took them a while to get that everyday job where they're going to face, you know, they're going to get the 500. They're not going to get to that 500 at-bat level. That's not going to be a problem for Dylan Cruz. You put all that together, and again, we're not saying that he's not a great player when we say complimentary. He's one of the top prospects in all of baseball. We're just saying it's going to be more of a well-rounded package, a guy who can hit, who can get on base, going to hit for power, but it's probably not going to be home run titles, more productive power, steals bases, does everything you want to do, and kind of the kind of guy that you're hopefully turn around in 2035 and go, wow, that's really one of the more productive players to ever come through the Nationals, to come out of the Nationals farm system, because he just does so many things well. And the other thing we'll say is last year, that 2024 season was solid, but it's also possible that we haven't seen what we saw in college from Dylan Cruz was beyond solid. It was a guy who was hitting 425 in the SEC. No one does that in the big leagues, obviously, but at the same time, so we might see a higher batting average. We might see a little bit more OBP than we saw in 2024. And if that happens, then really watch out, because if 2024 was kind of a down year for Dylan Cruz, he was still solid overall. If there's another gear for him to find here, then you really are talking about a guy who maybe we're underselling by saying he could be an extremely well-rounded player.
Okay, I want to finish with this. We keep them both on here. So over under for fantasy baseball players, 34.5 stolen bases. He stole 12 last year in 132 plate appearances and ended up getting tracked at 93rd percentile sprint speed. I knew he was fast. Until you see it in the big leagues and he already is using it, that's what stands out. Sometimes we see guys get called up and they're on the, you know, StatCast rankings pretty high, but they're not running yet. He was running right from the jump. Nationals are pretty aggressive. So JJ, then Jeff.
Over.
I'm going to say it's like a push to slightly under. I think that's right around the neighborhood. Say more like 28, 29. I like to be a little conservative with those. I don't want to go over. It's the Price is Right rule, right? It's too old school for that, right? But, I think the thing with Cruz, it's funny, is we had talked about this when he was drafted as a prospect, that, like, there's more speed here than you realize based on the stolen base numbers at LSU, because his job at LSU was to drive all the guys on base in. He was the big bat in the lineup, where I think he's been able to kind of, you know, fit a role that maybe is more complementary to his all-around skills and abilities. So that's a good point you made.
Can I just make the note that, you know, when we talk about that, when we said the Adam Eaton comp, well, I will say this is a way that he might be better to eat, because Eaton never had 20 steals in a season. Mm-hmm. We think that Dylan Cruz will easily go beyond 20 steals in a season.
Yeah, I'm saying, I mean, he could be a 30-plus stolen base guy. I mean, if he really figures out how to get on base at a consistent rate and keeps developing, I mean, he just got his first taste of the big leagues. Who knows? Maybe it's 40-plus. You would think with Adam Eaton, oh, he stole at least 20, but that's a good call there. So anyway, we're excited about this name. Many of you know him already. Dylan Cruz is the top prospect in the Washington Nationals organization until that prospect status goes away at some point this year. So thanks for checking out this one. We do a prospect profile on the top prospect in each organization from Baseball America every single day during spring training. So make sure you catch the top prospect videos for all of the teams.
Yeah, I know he's a rookie. Yeah, I know he was limited in innings this year. But hey, he's just better than the other guys who are candidates to start game three, or maybe it's a game four.
We're excited to talk about this pitching prospect in the Phillies organization. He happens to be number one overall in the Phillies organization, according to Baseball America. Prospect profile time on Andrew Painter. Scott Braun and Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Jeff, you got to see Andrew Painter in person, one of the last people to do so before he went under the knife.
And then I was there at his return as well. Yeah, I saw him his third to last start of 2022. Of course, he threw a little bit in spring training going into 23 before, you know, got injured in spring training and then sort of took their time in terms of making a decision on whether or not to have Tommy John surgery. So effectively, he missed 2 years and then came back in the Arizona Fall League. I just so happened to be on the other side of the country in Arizona for the first week of the AFL this year. And this was actually the first of two games on my last day there. The first week of the season, he came back on a Saturday at Scottsdale, as you can see right there, faced Bryce Eldridge as well as some other top names and prospects. The stuff was back to what it had been previously. I'd say the command and control was a little bit less pinpoint, but upper 90 stuff, getting sort of ride with some cut on that four-seam fastball, mixing a couple of different breaking ball shapes, and showing a changeup as well. As I said, I saw his first start back in terms of a competitive setting. So the command not being crisp, I don't think is any real surprise. But overall, it was still turbo stuff, you know, really rare in terms of movement and power. You just don't see guys like that. There's probably some nits that you could pick potentially about, you know, extension and some things like that. But overall, Painter looks back and he looks poised to, I think, sort of get back to where he was going into the beginning of 2023.
I feel like Painter's a guy who it's easy to have kind of, if you pay attention, but not close attention to prospects, it's easy to have forgotten about him for a little while because, like Jeff laid out, he got hurt in 2023 into spring training, tried to rehab it, I know a lot of times fans will be like, why didn't he just get it cut on then? He lost time because of that. But getting Tommy John surgery is a serious surgery. So if you kind of have that, it could heal. You kind of often want to see if you can avoid the knife. In the case of Painter, unfortunately, it didn't work out. And it did really mean that he missed much of two seasons, right? So he missed basically 23 and 24 until the Arizona Fall League. So there's kind of been this like little gap in his resume here that's easily explained. But the thing that does jump out, the thing that Jeff saw when he was there in the Arizona Fall League, is the stuff back. Like, the key thing you want to see with a guy coming off of Tommy John surgery, yeah, there's a little bit of rust. Yeah, he's going to have to shake that off. But before the injuries, Painter was as dominant a pitcher in the minor leagues as there was. He was our first ever Baseball America Minor League Pitcher of the Year, a new award that we started. The first year was Andrew Painter's, and in 22. So you see it now and you say, okay, so the stuff's back. Well, great. As soon as the stuff's back, shakes off a little bit of that rust, you are talking already once again about one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball. And a guy, Jeff, like the question I kind of have for you is, I know he's coming off of Tommy John surgery. I know he's coming off of basically two lost seasons, but is it crazy to think that we shouldn't be expecting it to be too long in 25 before we see him in the big leagues? The Phillies are already kind of laying out the Painter plan and how they know they have to limit his innings, but at the same time, they know that this guy should be able to make an impact for them this year, don't they?
You know, a lot of this is just sort of positioning him to pitch, you know, once a week, be able to skip weeks, and just sort of manage the workload. So that way he's available for them late in the season and into the playoffs. That's really what it looks like to me in terms of what his recovery time would be. Kind of would have had a normal off season just based on the timing of the surgery and when he returned. And potentially we've seen guys make pretty big jumps coming off of surgery over the last couple of years. I would imagine though that they have a number, they want to sort of play it safe while also being able to have the option of like, let's take it easy in the beginning, take it easy in spring training, have him throwing less in April and May in AAA, and, you know, you really use maybe late May and June when the weather's also better in the Northeast, where a predominant amount of that division in AAA's games are, or if they decide to go to Reading for whatever reason and pitch him in one of the worst pitching parks in minor league baseball, they could do that as well. But you're going to want to avoid that cold weather. I think they're probably going to work around that a little bit, but with the ultimate goal of, you know, having maybe 50 innings that he's available for in August, September, October, where the Phillies, I think, you know, based on what their team looks like and how much they invest in the trade deadline and in free agency, it wouldn't shock me if that's what the plan is and why the plan is so specific to July already, when he's missed 2 years, has had recovery, has pitched in competitive games in 2024. It kind of doesn't make sense. I would imagine that's probably what the plan is.
You hit on one thing, Jeff, that I think is important here. The key thing for Painter is he's now had a pretty normal offseason, which is important. He's had a normal offseason of work on things, rest, recover, all that. This is not something where a lot of times we say the guy who's, you know, at month 16 in, you know, spring training, like, oh, he's ready to go. But that's not the same thing. That's you spend an entire offseason rehabbing your injury to get ready for the season. In Andrew Painter's case, he's already done all that. He's pitched in the AFL. He knows that his arm feels okay again. Then he had a regular offseason to come into. It's not going to be a regular season as we laid out with the Painter plan. But I think the key thing about this is Andrew Painter, the hope is the Phillies expect to be in the playoffs. See, Phillies expect to be in the playoffs every year. When they do, hopefully for them, hopefully for Andrew Painter, he's making a case as a rookie for a spot in their playoff rotation, because that's how good he is. This is a guy who at that point should hopefully be able to say, hey, he's not going to be game one, game two. They have Zach Wheeler. They have, you know, they have other guys who probably are going to be at the front of the rotation, but it's not just depth. This is a guy who may kind of leap over some other guys because he has the dominating stuff where you say, okay, yeah, I know he's a rookie. Yeah, I know he was limited in innings this year, but hey, he's just better than the guys, the other guys who are candidates to start game three, or maybe it's a game four of a series, and he's going to give us the best chance to win.
Yeah, injuries happen, of course, but even if they're fully loaded for the playoffs, that's going to be too much talent if it's all clicking for him, for them to deny him a spot in a rotation. So JJ, I think it's brilliant. July-ish is the plan for them to start getting them implemented into the bigs. Good. In some cases, not good. We used this on Foul Territory at one point. I'm trying to remember who I referred to, but there was like Paul Skenes is a good example. Okay. If I'm the Pirates and I'm not making the playoffs on a year-to-year basis, I'm not saving Paul Skenes in year one and hoping that we need him for the playoffs. In Andrew Painter's case, I think the Phillies have enough of a playoff book and recent history here that they are okay to do this. And there's a pretty good chance we're not going to get to the end of the season and say, oh, the Phillies missed the playoffs by one game and they should have called up Andrew Painter sooner because you can't play like there's a tomorrow. Is that a fair strategy from Philadelphia?
Yeah. And I think the other key part that you really want to avoid here, let's say that they have in their number, like, okay, they're comfortable for 75 innings with Painter this year, or 100, whatever it is. The thing you definitely don't want, we don't want a Strasburg and the Nationals situation from years ago where it was like, well, sorry guys, but we've run out of innings for Andrew now. And so we're going to shut him down and we're looking forward to seeing him pitch again in 2026. You want to make sure it's a long postseason now. October, you could see another 15 to 20 innings there. They want to make sure that Andrew Painter's ready to give them those 15 to 20 innings if they need it, maybe 25, because that could happen. And he is good enough that if it all breaks right, they really need those innings because he's that good.
Yep, smart. And this team hasn't gotten over the hump with this current group. They have not won a World Series. So we'll see if Andrew Painter is the secret weapon in October for the Phillies. We do these every single day here during spring training. Your prospect profiles are highlighting the number one prospect in each farm system. So we'll keep going through them. And also make sure you get caught up on any that you missed on the Baseball America YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening to us, thank you. And we'll see you on the next one.
Catchers who can hit really are worth their weight in gold. There's very few of those in the major leagues, and it can make a big difference whether it's for the Braves or even as a potential trade asset.
We're talking top prospects team by team. Let's hit the Atlanta Braves with a prospect profile. Top prospect in their system, according to Baseball America, is Drake Baldwin. Scott Braun, along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. All right, we got a catcher here who could make an impact in 2025. So this one's big. J.J., what do you think about Drake Baldwin?
Drake Baldwin is the next in what is now a pretty impressive line of Braves catching prospects. You know, don't forget that Shea Langeliers was a Braves catching prospect. And don't forget that William Contreras was also a Braves catching prospect. Maybe in hindsight, they want to have that one back. But here we have now Sean Murphy, obviously, is, I would say, you know, Braves catcher for several years to come. But at the same time, they need someone to become that number two catcher. And we know that number two catchers in the big leagues are guys who play regularly nowadays. It's not no catchers going out there and playing 140 plus games. Drake Baldwin, we'll see if it's opening day, but Drake Baldwin should be ready to kind of step into that role at some point in 2025. Really a breakout season in 2024, I would say. Very impressive, kind of well-rounded player. If you want to knock Drake Baldwin, maybe you could say that he doesn't have any exceptionally loud tools. It's not like plus-plus power. It's not a plus-plus hit tool. It's not plus-plus defense or anything like that. But, Jeff, the other thing that does stand out with Drake Baldwin is if you said what are his weaknesses, I think you would also say there's nothing here that's really a glaring weakness. He's just pretty good at kind of doing all the aspects of the job, the very difficult job of being a big league catcher.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at what he does well. You know, the defensive part of the game, I think, is still coming along for him. There's been some questions there, but he's not being asked to be an everyday catcher. And I think, you know, where his probable biggest benefit to this lineup is as some depth and as a bat who puts together really good quality at bats. When you take a look at, you know, the bat to ball ability, it's high contact rates, it's low in zone miss rates. He rarely ever chases. The EV data is plus. His 90th percentile this year is about 106 miles per hour. So when you combine all those traits, there aren't many hitters in general in the big leagues, in the minor leagues last year, who combine all those traits at the level that Baldwin does. So just as a hitter, he's a really sort of standout talent. And I think that's the biggest thing with Baldwin is that, you know, if he can play a little bit of first base, or maybe they get him some run in left field when they need it or something like that, or even DH, he has the ability to maybe see 350 at bats and provide them sort of like that 10th man, that 10th hitter sort of in the lineup when they need it, and can play the matchups a little bit too. He's a really good offensive prospect. And if the catching comes around, they might be looking to move Sean Murphy soon.
I won't go that far yet, but I will say that I do think that one of the things that Baldwin also stands out as is he's kind of the outlier here. The Braves have understandably kind of made their entire approach. We're going to draft pitchers, we're going to develop pitchers, and we're going to be really good at developing pitching prospects. And they have been, but they also haven't drafted a whole lot of hitters. They haven't developed a whole lot of hitters. And if you say, well, why is that? Well, I would say partly it's because they have a long-term deal locked up at catcher, Murphy, first base with Olsen, second base with Albies, third base with Riley, Acuna in the outfield, Michael Harris in the outfield. There just aren't a whole lot of openings here because of all the guys they have signed to long-term extensions. So they've obviously made the emphasis on filling out that pitching staff. But when you look at Baldwin, to their credit, to the Braves' credit and to Baldwin's credit, this is not a first-round pick. This is a very astute day two pick from a couple of years ago that has really kind of blossomed and really does fill a need for the Braves here. The other thing that does jump out with this, in an ideal world, you would say that the Braves really, they don't need to develop a whole lot of position players. But if they had a big league ready catcher and a big league ready shortstop right now, and even in kind of complementary roles, not guys who need to be stars. That's kind of what they really need to produce from the farm system. I don't know if they have that shortstop. I think Nacho Alvarez is a little bit more of a utility guy, but Baldwin is the perfect fit there as that number two catcher and should be able to do that for several years to come.
Yeah, and every team, of course, always needs pitching. And I know the Braves have been good for a while, so they're often picking in the back of a draft. But, JJ, I just think about Spencer Schwellenbach. I mean, it's not like everyone was talking about him. And look what he's developed into for Atlanta. If you're a team like them and you want to keep this train rolling, you need some successful stories like that too, right?
You do. And I would say that one of the things the Braves have been really good about in doing that, their pitching development has been excellent. Schwellenbach is a perfect example of that. Schwellenbach really was more of a shortstop at Nebraska than a pitcher. It was kind of someone that you could like the arm, but it was in very short, you know, short kind of appearances. And the other thing, Schwellenbach is another one of the guys who's gone through this. The Braves are much more willing to take on injury risk in their pitchers than a lot of teams. Spencer Strider, probably the biggest example of this. Strider was coming off of Tommy John surgery when the Braves drafted him and made him basically the best pick of that shortened five-round 2020 draft. Schwellenbach's another guy who pretty much you say, well, when does pro career start? It's like, well, after he had Tommy John surgery. They've had a number of these situations. J.R. Richie's another one. Owen Murphy's now recovering from Tommy John surgery. The Braves have had a lot of pitching prospects who you could say, well, they got hurt. But at the same time, that's kind of allowed them to really pick guys who may not have lasted to them if it not for the fact that they had some injury risk. Some teams kind of shy away from that. The Braves seem to kind of embrace it. And you look at the payoff they're getting for it. You could say, well, they keep having guys get hurt. Well, yeah, Strider got hurt last year. Would you, if you had that to do over again, you'd 100% do it the same way. He wasn't a first-round pick. He was near the back of a five-round draft. And they got basically a Cy Young finalist out of it. Okay, yeah, he got hurt. They'll do that again, and they will take that risk again. And we've seen this time and time again. They keep taking these kind of risks because they do see a payoff for them.
Yeah, I'll take the year off from the guy who's striking everyone out. So that's okay. I mean, you got to plan that way. So, Jeff, as far as what we're working with right now with the farm system covered for Atlanta, is there other signs of hope? Or was this easy to put Baldwin at the top of the list?
Yeah, I think there's some interesting candidates in terms of their pitchers. They have, you know, they've been drafting a ton of them. JJ kind of touched on some of that. I think, you know, AJ Smith-Shawver was probably the next closest candidate. Somebody who has major league experience in each of the last two seasons, has pretty big stuff in terms of, you know, what his fastball is, you know, sitting in the mid 90s, has a decent amount of ride, made some changes this year in terms of changing from the slider, kind of cutter slider, to more of a traditional mid 70s curveball, and really improved his changeup. So he did take a step forward this year in some development ways, I think particularly in his future as a starting pitcher. But when we kind of put those two guys together, I think, you know, Baldwin is one where catchers who can hit really are worth their weight in gold. There's very few of those in the major leagues, and it can make a big difference, whether it's for the Braves or even as a potential trade asset. I don't know if the A's have anybody that the Braves want right now.
That has seemed to be a very happy marriage. The A's and the Braves like to do business together. Hey, maybe we hit a point eventually, you can hope, that, you know, Atlanta is actually giving some major league assets to the A's since they've been bad for a while now. Maybe they kind of get it back. We'll see.
Can I just interject and say, but if the Brewers try to slide into their DMs, just say no. Mm. Just say no, we don't want to, you know, Story Ruiz throw in here.
Yeah, we'll just help you out. You just give us William Contreras, Joel Piamps, and I think there was someone else notable in there too. So look up that trade if you want a little more info, and get yourself a Baseball America subscription if you don't have one already. And also stay here if you'd like to learn about other top prospects per organization.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.